up at Akbar's bust, then flattened his ears in embarrassment.
Well, I was taking a substantial risk, but that can't be the reason you need to see me. What's this about a transport leaving the system?
Jaina swallowed, then stepped close enough to speak in a hushed voice. It was bound for the Hapes Consortium, sir.
The Consortium?
The fur on Bois-Tu's brow pulled forward.
You're sure?
She nodded.
Very sure. The accuracy of the intercepts is beyond doubt.
Well, how alarming.
Bois-Tu fell silent for a moment, his gaze growing distant and thoughtful.
So, the Corellians are hoping to draw the Hapens into the war on their side.
That's very hard to believe, Admiral, Jaina said. We might want to consider alternative explanations.
I already have, Jedi Solo.
Bois-Tu studied Jaina carefully, his eyes slowly growing beady and suspicious.
This one is near certainty. Naval intelligence reports that both Nal Hutta and Bothwe have refused to ally, at least openly, against the Galactic Alliance, and Corellia knows she can't defeat us alone.
They may be desperate, Admiral, but they're not fools. The Galactic Alliance has Tenel Ka's full support, and the Corellians know it. She sent us 2 full battle fleets.
Bois-Tu's look of suspicion changed to one of disappointment.
I didn't say they were going to meet the Queen Mother, Jedi Solo.
Jaina frowned, digesting his remark for a moment, then asked,
You think Corellia intends to overthrow Tenel Ka?
I think Corellia intends to help,
Bois-Tu corrected.
The Queen Mother's support of the Alliance is unpopular among her nobles, so I'm sure they have their pick of potential usurpers.
No.
Jaina's stomach knotted with outrage, with a refusal to believe her parents could betray such a good friend.
This just doesn't make sense. I mean, I have good reason to believe that's not what the Corellians are intending.
Bois-Tu looked at her expectantly.
I'm only sorry that I'm not at liberty to reveal it, she said. It's, a secret of the Order.
I see.
Bois-Tu tugged at his graying fur, then turned away and motioned for Jaina to follow.
Come with me, young woman.
Jaina gulped and did as she was told. Bois-Tu led her into his private office at the rear of the tactical salon. There were half a dozen sturdy plastoid chairs in front of the desk and a pair of gray couches in one corner. But Bois-Tu did not invite Jaina to sit on any of the furniture. Instead, he opaqued the transparisteel wall that separated the cabin from the salon, then turned to face her.
The transport was the Millennium Falcon.
The Admiral stated this as fact, not question.
Jedi aren't technically under my command, so I won't bother ordering you to answer me, but you should know that this was what I assume.
Jaina's heart fell.
The exact identity of the vessel didn't seem relevant at the time.
Bois-Tu's voice grew sharp.
Obviously it was. You don't believe Han and Leia Solo would betray your friend.
I know they wouldn't, Jaina insisted.
You would have a better idea of that than I, of course.
Bois-Tu's reaction was surprising in its mildness.
But the fact remains that they're on their way to the Hapes Consortium, and this is a very crucial moment for Corellia. We must at least consider the possibility.
He laid a furry hand on Jaina's shoulder, then continued in a voice as gentle as it was raspy.
I want you to take a moment and think this over very carefully. I'll believe whatever you tell me. But please, remember that the lives of your parents are only 2 of the many billions that may depend on your accuracy.
I'm aware of that, Admiral, Jaina said. I know it looks bad, but I just don't think they would do something like that.
Bois-Tu stared into her eyes.
You're sure?
It's what I believe, Admiral. That's the best I can do.
Jaina looked away. Bois-Tu retreated toward his desk,
then clasped his hands behind his back and stared at the galactic vidmap hanging on his wall.
Whatever your parents are doing in the Hapen space, the trip has something to do with a coup attempt. Perhaps they are only going to warn Tenelkar about the consequences of supporting the Alliance.
You mean to threaten her?
A threat is a warning,
Watsu replied.
At the moment, that is what we must assume. It's really Corellia's only hope.
Which means the Corellians aren't going to send the Kira's fleet against our blockade,
Janus said, guessing Watsu already realized this.
They'll use it to support the Hapen coup.
Exactly,
Watsu replied.
My fleet is badly out of position.
So you'll reposition?
I'll certainly suggest it to Admiral Nyathol,
Watsu said.
But she's a very domineering fish. She's laid a trap for the Corellians, and she won't abandon it easily.
Then what are you going to do?
I don't know yet.
Watsu wrinkled his muzzle and returned his gaze to the galactic vidmap on his wall. His voice assumed an absent-minded tone.
How interesting.
When he did not elaborate, Jaina went to his side and stared up at the vidmap. Watsu pointed a finger at Duro, which was located just beyond Corellia on the Corellian trade spine.
It appears that Chief Omis's fears were rather well justified.
Jaina scowled, still not understanding.
I'm happy to hear that, but...
The mines.
Watsu tapped a control key below the display, and the map zoomed in until it showed only the Corellian system. He pointed at a tiny yellow blip near the outer edge of the system.
In a few weeks, the Kirises will be in a direct line between Duro and the Corellian star. With all that electromagnetic blast in the background, it would be impossible for the Duros to detect the launch of the Kiris fleet.
Jaina's jaw dropped. Sal Solo was going to attack Duro.
The timing is certainly right,
Watsu said.
And Duro still has large deposits of Viridium and Cortosis.
Jaina did not know whether to be sickened or relieved. Well, at least Chief Omis and Uncle Luke can stop double-guessing themselves about the blockade, Jaina said. The last thing the galaxy needs is someone dumping a million tons of Viridium into the black market.
Or to start selling lightsaber-proof armor,
Buatu added.
But that's not our concern at the moment. Someone needs to warn the Queen Mother about the situation, and we can't trust this to a holocom. Even if the signal isn't intercepted, we can't be sure the message will reach Tenelkar without passing through the wrong hands first. The consortium is a real Pflugr bed of intrigue.
I can reach out to her through the Force,
Jaina said.
That will give her some warning.
A specific warning?
Jaina shook her head.
She'll know there's danger, but not from where.
And someone needs to see her in person,
Buatu said.
So you're sending me?
Jaina asked.
I'm asking you,
Buatu corrected.
You're a Jedi, remember?
Of course, Jaina said. I mean, I'll be happy to go.
Tenelkar's Palace, Planet Hapes, inside the Hapes Consortium.
The Queen Mother's special salon was equipped with every modern convenience, from flavor-optimizing beverage dispensers to auto-massaging furniture to participatory holodrama booths. So Han did not understand why the only chronometer in the room was an ancient pendulum clock, the kind with a long, weighted arm that swung side to side and emitted a loud tock every second.
One more tock and I'm gonna smash that thing, Han growled.
I don't think Queen Mother would take that very well, Captain Solo,
C-3PO said.
It's pre-Lorelian, probably looted from the Balmoran colony ship by the very pirates who abducted Tenelkar's ancestor.
So it's about time Tenelkar got another.
Han eyed the salon's rare burlwood paneling and gilded OG molding, searching for the spy cam that just had to be there.
By the looks of this place, she ought to be able to afford something a little quieter.
Han. Leia, who had been sitting on the floor meditating, opened her eyes. That clock is worth more than the Falcon, a lot more.
Yeah, and it's noisier, too.
Han stood, then grabbed a priceless Larmel-topped end table and started across the room. Leia jumped up to block his way.
Han, what are you doing?
I can't take it anymore.
He gave Leia a quick half-wink, then started around her.
That talking is driving me nuts.
So I see.
Leia caught him by the arm.
But the crazy act won't get us an audience any sooner. We're not under surveillance.
Of course we are. This is Hapes, remember?
It's Tenel Ka's Hapes.
Leia turned him around to face her.
And she respects us too much to spy on us.
Han rolled his eyes.
Yeah, right.
She knows we'd notice the surveillance. So why risk insulting us when she won't learn anything? This way she can let us know that no matter what our differences, she still considers us friends.
Let me see if I've got this straight.
Han continued to hold the table up by his shoulder.
She keeps us cool on our heels 7 hours to make sure we know we're still friends?
Exactly,
Leia said.
It's the same reason flight control had us land the Falcon in the Royal Hangar. She's trying to let us know politely that she won't be able to see us.
Han's stomach sank.
Tell me this isn't one of those diplomatic code things.
Leia gave him an apologetic smile.
Afraid so. You know how Coruscant would react if she gave us an audience. Omis and Niathal would think she was considering the possibility of recalling her fleets, possibly even helping Corellia.
Han set the table down.
Then how come she told Gedgen to send us?
To placate her nobles, I'm sure,
Leia said.
She needed to buy some time to maneuver, and now we've served our purpose.
So she used us, Han said. I hate that.
Han pressed an intercom call button, and a moment later the peevish face of one of Tenel Ka's male social secretaries appeared on the vidscreen.
Captain Solo,
he said, obviously exasperated.
Is there something I can do for you?
Yeah, Han said. You could tell Tenel Ka I'm tired of waiting.
The man's expression grew weary.
As I have explained, the Queen Mother is unavailable. She asked me to assure you that as soon as she can break free...
Break free? Han cried. We were supposed to have half a day with her. We've already been here twice that.
Excuse me, Captain,
the secretary said.
Were you under the impression that the Queen Mother was expecting you?
Of course I'm under that impression. We had an appointment.
Han was ready to crawl through the intercom and choke the man.
If you think we came all the way from Corellia just to drop in...
Are you saying we're not expected?
Leia interrupted, coming to stand next to Han.
Indeed I am,
the secretary replied.
The Queen Mother canceled the conference when Prime Minister Gedgen insisted it had to be held on the same day as the Queen's pageant.
Han scowled.
The Queen's pageant?
To pick the most handsome man in the consortium. After the Queen Mother's birthday and the Marauder's masquerade, it's the largest ball of the year.
Precisely,
the secretary nodded.
I explained all this to Prime Minister Gedgen myself.
To Gedgen personally? Leia asked. Not to his assistants?
There's no use acting surprised,
the secretary sniffed.
He understood me very well.
A cloud came over Leia's face.
I'm sure he did. Please accept our apologies. The mistake is clearly ours.
Obviously,
the secretary replied. The vid display went blank. Han deactivated their end of the intercom and turned to Leia.
Do you get the feeling that this is a setup?
Absolutely, Leia said. But I don't understand what Gedgen expects to gain by embarrassing us.
Han began to feel worried. With the Bothans and Huts both refusing open alliance, Corellia was growing more desperate by the day, and desperate governments took dangerous gambles. Maybe Gedgen did not care about irritating Tenel Ka, because he expected to be dealing with someone else in the near future. In the very near future. Han turned to Leia.
What if it's not us Gedgen is setting up?
Leia's eyes grew narrow.
You think he's using us to draw Tenel Ka out?
Or positioning us to take the blame,
Han said.
If Tenel Ka gets killed, whoever's getting ready to take her place will want to point a finger at someone pretty criff and quick. Otherwise, an investigation might uncover them.
Leia thought for a moment, then shook her head. Possible, but Tenel Ka is bound to have a first-class security team. And as a former Jedi Knight, she's formidable in her own right. Whoever's behind this, they're smart enough to realize they'll need a professional. And a good one.
Sure, but I don't see where we fit in, Han said.
I don't either yet. Leia thought for a moment, then asked, why was it important for us to arrive on the day of the Queen's pageant?
Oh!
C-3PO raised his hand.
I think I know.
Han turned to the droid.
So spit it out!
C-3PO's photoreceptors flickered.
Droids are unable to salivate, Captain Solo. But the palace will be filled with handsome young men today, most of them unknown to the staff. It would be the ideal time to slip an assassin onto the premises.
Which means security will be even tighter than normal, Han pointed out.
Which is why we're important, Leia said. Gedgen knows Tenel Ka will find time to see us, and that will interrupt the security routine.
So we're bait, Han grumbled.
Han stepped closer and opened Leia's robe. Leia raised her brow. Han, I don't think we have time right now.
Han gave her a roguish grin. Don't worry, this won't take long.
He opened one of the pouches on her utility belt and removed an automated lock slicer.
And then we can go find Tenel Ka. That should throw a Hydra spanner into their plans.
Han went to the hand-carved double doors through which the social secretary had disappeared after dumping them in the salon, then knelt on the floor and slipped the unit's input-output card into the crack between the doors. C-3PO clunked over to stand behind him.
Captain Solo, may I ask what you're doing?
No.
The lock slicer emitted a short beep, announcing that it had made contact with the security system. Before Han could activate it, Leia reached over his shoulder and covered the instrument panel. Han, we need to be...
We can't afford to wait around, Han said. Tenel Ka's a good kid. She isn't going to keep us sitting.
I was going to say quiet, Leia interrupted. There are two sentries on the other side of these doors.
Oh, dear,
C-3PO said.
It looks as though Captain Solo is going to embarrass us again.
It's okay, 3PO. Leia pulled Han away from the door and took the lock slicer from his hands. In fact, we need you to return to the Falcon. C-3PO cocked his head.
Return to the Falcon? Whatever for?
Just do it, Chiphead.
Fellowship Plaza, Coruscant.
Located in the heart of the Senate District, between the Jedi Temple and the Galactic Justice Center, Fellowship Plaza was usually abandoned after dark. But tonight, Alima was hardly alone. Jason and Ben stood just a few meters away, talking in the shadows beside a neatly trimmed row of blar trees. And she was not the only one eavesdropping on them. First, she had spotted Lumaya, standing in a tall privacy hedge on the opposite side of the walkway. So quiet and motionless, it was impossible to be certain she was still there. Then there was the dark blur that had come creeping through the fog after Ben arrived. It was about 20 meters away, crouching behind the hedge of Alima's side of the walkway, pointing what appeared to be a small parabolic dish through the blar trees toward where Ben and Jason stood talking. Whoever it was, the shadow had to be a Jedi, and a fairly adept one at that. Like Lumaya and Alima herself, he or she had drawn in on himself until he no longer seemed to have a Force presence at all. How have the sparring sessions been going? Jason asked. Is he still trying to make you lose your temper? Alima thought she saw Ben shaking his head. The two cousins were taking care to stand out of the light. And in such foggy conditions, even dark-sensitive Twi'lek eyes could see little more than silhouettes.
No, Ben said. I think he's really trying to teach me something.
You couldn't ask for a better instructor, Jason said.
But be careful. Your father is just looking for an excuse to send you back to the academy.
Ben remained silent for a moment,
then asked, Is he going to find one?
That's up to you, Jason replied evenly.
Do you think the techniques I've been teaching you are dark? It depends on how I use them,
Ben replied.
Exactly.
Jason's voice grew warm, and he clasped Ben's shoulder.
But the older your father grows, the more conservative he becomes. He's afraid he hasn't done a good job preparing the modern generation of Jedi, that they aren't strong enough to employ all aspects of the Force.
What do you think?
Ben asked.
I think he's done a better job than he realizes. Many Jedi Knights aren't strong enough to use the whole Force, but some are.
Jason laid both hands on Ben's shoulders.
You are. Ben poured pride into the Force.
You sure?
What do you think? Jason demanded. You're just asking because you want me to say it again.
I guess so.
Ben's tone was chagrined.
You wouldn't be teaching me to use my emotions if you didn't think I was strong enough.
Alima's heart swelled with an awe that was almost religious. Unless she misunderstood what she was hearing, and that did not seem possible, Luke Skywalker was losing his only son to the thing he feared most, the dark side. And his own nephew was going to be the instrument of that loss.
Ben turned and started up the walkway, passing first Lumaya's hiding place, then Alima's. Once he was past, Alima turned her attention to the back side of the hedge and found the eavesdropper creeping toward her, still holding the parabolic antenna in one hand. As the shadow drew nearer, its silhouette sharpened into that of a Jedi in a standard hooded robe, then into the form of a tall woman with the pale face and heavy brow of a Shev. A couple of steps more, and Alima realized that this was not just any Jedi following Ben. It was Trissina Lobi, one of the masters who had served on Cal Omas's special counsel during the war with the Yuuzhan Vong. Alima dropped her hand to her lightsaber, at the same time willing Lobi not to make the mistake of letting that parabolic antenna swing past her hiding place. She needn't have worried. Lobi was still 2 meters away when Lumaya's sharp voice sounded from the other side of the hedge.
Jason, I'm impressed.
Alima risked looking away from Lobi and saw Lumaya stepping onto the foggy walkway. Her long robe seemed to flow out of the hedges as though they were nothing but shadow.
You have him very well under control.
It's not a matter of control. There was just a hint of hostility in Jason's voice.
Ben is my cousin. I care about him very much.
Lumaya studied Jason from behind her veil, then said,
Caring is fine, as long as you don't let it stand in your way.
There's a difference between letting something stand in your way and destroying it needlessly, Jason countered. I'm beginning to think maybe I should send him back to his father.
Lumaya's voice grew as alarmed as it did disapproving.
Why would you do a foolish thing like that?
To complete his training,
Jason said.
I'm having trouble finding the time to do it myself, and that leaves him vulnerable. You saw how he tried to manipulate me into feeding his ego.
I did. And that kind of weakness will make him a servant to his emotions,
Lumaya said.
It will also make him your servant, if you use it wisely.
That's not what I want for my cousin,
Jason said, sounding slightly disgusted.
What you want doesn't matter,
Lumaya retorted.
What you need does, and you need an apprentice.
I need an assistant, Jason countered. And there are several Jedi Knights who would serve me better and require less time from me. Tahiri Vela, for example.
Tahiri is not a descendant of Anakin Skywalker,
Lumaya replied.
She does not have Ben's potential, and she will not serve you as well in the long run.
Jason remained silent for a long time, then finally asked, Don't you mean serve you?
It's the same thing,
Lumaya replied quickly.
We serve one cause, though I am having doubts about you, Jason. You seem more committed to your friends and family than you do to our mission.
If that means protecting them from needless harm, then yes, I am, Jason said. We're supposed to be doing this for the good of the galaxy, and the galaxy includes my friends and family.
Of course it does, Jason. I don't mean to imply that it doesn't.
Though Lumaya's words were conciliatory, her voice remained stern and demanding.
But the galaxy is bigger than your family. You must be willing to sacrifice what you care about to a greater purpose.
I've already proved that I'm willing to do that, Jason said coldly. I'm proving it every day.
Indeed you are.
Lumaya's voice softened, and she took Jason's elbow in her hand.
All I'm saying is that we need to keep Ben near. I don't know how yet, but I have a sense that he will prove the key to our success.
Jason considered this for a moment, then let out his breath and nodded. Okay, for now. But the minute I begin to suspect that you're only using him to get even with Uncle Luke...
You won't, because I'm not,
Lumaya said.
Everything I do to bring peace and justice to the galaxy.
Lumaya glanced up and down the walkway, no doubt reaching out in the Force to make certain no one had wandered into the area while they were talking, then asked,
Why did you want to see me here?
Because I didn't have time to go to your apartment, Jason said. Alima glanced back to the other side of the hedge. Lobi had dropped into a crouch and was running a feed line from the antenna to a recording rod on her belt. Now Alima began to feel less awestruck by the balance than betrayed by it. Since her failed attack on Jason, she had spent her time spying on him and Lumaya, and it had slowly dawned on her that just as Luke was losing Ben to what he feared most, Jason was becoming what Leia hated most, a Sith Lord. But if Lobi revealed that to Luke now, Jason's training would never be completed. Luke would hunt Lumaya down and kill her. Leia would redeem her son through her love, and the Solos would live happily ever after. And where was the balance in that? Jason recaptured Alima's attention with an angry rebuttal to something she had missed. I don't have time to be that careful tonight. Nyathol is about to give me my own Star Destroyer. His voice grew calmer, yet also more cold and demanding. I was supposed to meet her 5 minutes ago, but I need you to take care of something for me. Now.
What is it?
Lumaya asked.
And you might try asking in a civil manner.
Alima kept her gaze fixed on Lobi, who was continuing to record every word. After a moment, Jason spoke in a calmer tone. Sorry, I lost a friend today.
I see.
Lumaya's voice held just a hint of disapproval at Jason's sadness.
That must be why the Ferals are rioting.
Yes, the world brain died this afternoon. Jason's voice actually cracked. But the Ferals aren't exactly rioting. They just don't have any impulse control without the world brain to guide them.
And you want me to provide some?
No. Coruscant Security can handle that, he said. I need you to finish that list I gave you.
The Bothans?
Lumaya asked.
Jason, you can't let your personal feelings...
I'm not, Jason interrupted. The Corellians finally figured out how GAG has been tracking them. They're planning to send their whole network after the world brain.
But not if they realize it's dead already,
Lumaya surmised. Right, Jason said. And I need them to attack. It will bring the terrorists out in the open.
And GAG will be waiting?
Lumaya asked. GAG will be watching, Jason corrected. Coruscant Security will handle the actual ambush. Our agents will concentrate on the terrorists who escape. Some are bound to panic, and with any luck we'll be able to follow them back to their ringleaders.
So, many Bothans must die to bait your trap,
Lumaya said. No one would understand the necessity better than Bothans, Jason said. As Jason said this, Lobi was pulling her comlink from her utility belt. Alima watched with increasing despair as the Chev carefully set the parabolic antenna on the ground and donned her headset and throat mic. This could not be in the interests of the balance, not when Alima still owed Leia so much. After a moment's pause, Lumaya said,
You know that finishing this list will force Bothawi to declare war. Their ambassador is on it.
Do him first, Jason said. Bothawi is going to declare war anyway. Niathal says they're already outfitting 3 cruiser fleets for Corellian crews.
Fine,
Lumaya said.
The ambassador first, if you're sure.
Don't I sound sure? Jason snapped. A pair of military boots began to clack down the walkway as he departed. Just do it. I can't keep the Admiral waiting any longer. Tresina Lobi reached for her throat mic and started to depress the send key in rhythmic sequence, using a click code to begin a silent broadcast to whoever was on the other end. Alima could see her finger movements just well enough to make out some of the message.
Skywalker, he was. Lumaya is following Ben.
That was as far as Lobi made it before Alima understood the reason the Force had brought the Chev so close to her hiding place.
Is more?
Alima jerked her lightsaber off her belt. She was a Jedi, and Jedi serve the balance.
Lumaya is...
Alima sprang from her hiding place, activating her blade as she flew through the air. Lobi was already rolling, her hand flying from her throat as she reached for her own weapon. Alima stretched her jump into a Force leap and brought her mangled half-foot down between Lobi's shoulder blades, then felt a crushing pain as the Chev continued to roll, smashing the back of an elbow into Alima's knee and knocking her legs out from beneath her. Alima landed flat atop a chrysanthus shrub, surprised and hurting. She whipped her lightsaber around to protect herself, half expecting to feel the death slash before it reached the middle guard. But the Chev had been disoriented by the unexpected assault, and decided to buy some reaction time by leaping into a high Force flip. Alima arched her back and sprang up to her feet, then nearly fell when her aching knee buckled. Instead of leaping into another attack, she extended her hand and used the Force to pluck the headset off Lobi's head. The Chev landed an instant later, her eyes wide with rage and disbelief, but she wasted no time acknowledging Alima's identity. She merely ignited her own lightsaber and raced forward to attack. Alima barely had time to slash the headset apart before the Chev was on her, driving her back toward the hedge with a combination of high slashes and powerful front thrust kicks. The first kick that landed drove the air from Alima's lungs. The second doubled her over, making her an easy target, until she used the Force to accelerate herself off Lobi's foot and deep into the hedge where she had been hiding a moment earlier. As Alima crashed into the blar trees, she heard Lumaya on the other side, calling down the walkway to Jason.
Go on! I'll handle this!
The Sith scowled and ignited her own weapon. An exotic one that seemed equal parts whip and lightsaber, with long, flexible strands of metal and bright hissing energy.
Who are you?
Lumaya demanded.
Why are you... No time!
Alima launched herself back through the blar trees. If Lobi had not yet followed, that could only mean she was fleeing.
Come, before the Jedi spy escapes.
Alima emerged from the hedge to find Lobi 20 paces away and already fading into the night. Alima dropped her lightsaber and pointed in the Chev's direction, opening herself completely to the Force, using her anger and fear to draw it deep down inside. A moment later, its power began to burn, and she released it in a long, crackling bolt that caught her target square between the shoulder blades and drove her to the ground. Continuing to pour Force lightning into Lobi's prostrate form, Alima limped forward on her throbbing knee. Lobi suddenly stopped writhing and extended a hand toward a nearby patio. A decorative urn came flying out of the fog. Alima let the Force lightning sizzle out and tried to redirect the urn. But Lobi's Force grasp was too secure. The urn caught her full on her crippled shoulder and sent her flying. She landed in the chrysanthus shrub several meters away, her body throbbing with pain and her mind numb with shock. The hum and sizzle of clashing weapons slowly brought her back to her senses, and she sat up to find Tresina Lobi spinning and parrying, slowly forcing Lumaya back, probing and fainting, trying to work her way past the crackling strands of Lumaya's exotic light whip and into the striking range of a lightsaber. Alima summoned her own weapon back into her grasp, then stood and limped forward to help. Lobi sprang into a backflip and sailed over a crackling whip strike. Then, as she was still descending, she extended a hand in Alima's direction and used the Force to pull her into the path of the flashing strands. Lumaya barely managed to shut down the weapon before it struck, and even then the hot filaments cut through Alima's robe, burning a rainbow of hot welts into her thighs and ribs. Alima was still screaming when Lobi landed at Lumaya's side.
The Chev brought her lightsaber down, and Lumaya's weapon arm, one of her many cybernetic parts, fell to the ground, trailing sparks and hydraulic fluid. Lobi reversed her blade instantly, angling for Lumaya's torso. But Alima was already leaping forward to catch the Chev's attack on her own lightsaber. Lobi whipped her lightsaber around low, aiming at Alima's knees and forcing her to leap back. Alima pointed at Lumaya's severed arm, then used the force to send it spinning toward Lobi's head. The Chev woman ducked easily, but that gave Lumaya time to call her light whip into her remaining hand and strike again. Lobi pivoted away from the attack. Alima sprang at her from behind, striking for the Chev's thick neck, then cried out in surprise as a huge foot glanced off her ribs and still sent her staggering back. Lumaya seized the opportunity to launch a flurry of attacks, fanning the strands of her whip to make it more difficult to block, striking right and left to prevent the Chev from pivoting away again, slowly driving Lobi back toward Alima's droning lightsaber. Then, finally, Lobi faltered, gathering herself for a force leap, but hesitating and retreating another step toward Alima instead. It was the moment Alima had been waiting for.
"You're good, Master Lobi, but not that good."
Alima spoke in a force whisper, so soft that it was little more than a thought.
"Even you cannot defeat two of us."
Lobi's head snapped around, her eyes filled with confusion and doubt, and she spun into a whirling charge of crescent kicks and horizontal lightsaber strikes. Alima held her ground, ducking a lightsaber strike and letting a kick slip off her shoulder. Then, force slammed the hilt of her lightsaber into the pit of the Chev's stomach and spoke again in her force whisper.
"No good."
Amazingly, Lobi stumbled only one step back. But that step was one too far. Lumaya's light whip caught her across the back of the legs and severed them both at the knees. The Chev roared first in anger. Then as she dropped onto the stumps and pitched forward onto her hands, in agony. It was a terrible sound to hear. Alima stepped forward and spoke once more in her force whisper.
"There's no need to suffer."
She swept her blade across the back of the Chev's neck, and the head tumbled away.
"Your fight is done."
Tenelkar's Palace, Planet Hapes, deep inside the Hapes Consortium.
The Hall of Masters was as long and fancy as all the others down which the Solos had sneaked, with red cauchemar carpeting and some of the finest artwork in the galaxy hanging on the walls. Between each masterpiece, an ornate trefoil arch led into another equally opulent corridor, while a white alabaster staircase at either end of the hallway ascended a vaulted turret into the highest reaches of Tenelkar's immense palace.
"Oh boy," Han said. "Which way now?"
"Good question." Han frowned.
"Can't you just follow the force or something?"
"I could if I wanted Tenelkar to feel me searching for her." Han and Leia ascended side by side, passing portrait after portrait of Tenelkar's royal ancestors. Their staircase was wide enough to accommodate a land speeder with room left for pedestrians, and it seemed to go up forever. After a good minute of climbing, a muffled murmur began to spill out of an unseen doorway onto a landing above. They continued to ascend, slowly and silently, when they had drawn to within a few meters of the landing. Han and Leia pressed their backs to the wall and crept up the last few steps in silence, then slipped into an extravagant waiting room filled with cologne-heavy, hapen males. Leia slipped her hand through Han's arm.
"They're probably suitors hoping to escort the Queen Mother to tonight's banquet," she whispered, leading him into the room. "Tenelkar certainly likes to play games with her nobles."
"As long as they don't play games with us," Han answered.
As they moved deeper into the room, the young nobles turned to study them, sneering at Han's travel-worn flight jacket or frowning at Leia's Jedi robes. Han and Leia weaved through the crowd to a large, spitting rancor fountain that dominated the center of the room. Opposite them, a dozen royal guards blocked the mouth of a large ceremonial arch, beyond which lay a long white corridor.
The hall was lined with displays of antiquated weapons and ancient blast armor, but its most spectacular feature was a glistening wind crystal chandelier, the size of an A-wing fighter.
"Guess we know where the royal residence is," Han muttered, looking away from the guards. "But to get past this bunch, it's gonna take pretty big..."
Leia's fingers bit into Han's arm.
"Han, she's here."
"Here?"
Han glanced casually around the room and saw nothing out of the ordinary. Just a couple of young nobles arguing over the stakes of a Dejeric game, and a middle-aged bachelor lecturing a pasty-skinned youth about the propriety of wearing a hat indoors.
"Who's here?"
"The assassin."
Leia's gaze went to the pasty-skinned youth and stayed there. With a slim, beardless face and a bald head crowned by a fashionable, if ridiculously tall, top hat, he had a dangerous yet feminine appearance. His eyes were dark and sunken, his nose as straight as a knife, his mouth a small, ruby-lipped gash. He was wearing a ruffled dress jacket that had to be 6 sizes too large for him, and he was careful to keep his hands balled inside the outer pockets, as though afraid of what they might do on their own.
"You mean him?" Han whispered in disbelief. "He's just a kid."
The kid's eyes slowly slid away from his lecturer and found Leia. When she did not look away, he gave her a short, almost imperceptible nod, then turned back to his conversation. Leia grabbed Han's arm.
"That's no kid."
She pulled him toward the guards waiting beneath the ceremonial arch.
"In fact, she's older than you are."
"She?"
"It's not important right now," Leia said. "She's not working alone. We need to warn Tenel Ka."
As they neared the arch, a rough-featured guard wearing the golden cuffhashes of a sergeant of the Royal Guard stepped out to meet them, blocking their way with a bulky Hapen power blaster.
"The Hall of the Wind Crystals is closed to visitors."
"Of course it is."
Leia lifted her hand in one of those little waves that Jedi use when they were making a force suggestion, then spoke so softly the sergeant had to lean down to hear her.
"But the Queen Mother is in danger. You need to seal the chamber."
The sergeant's eyes widened, and he repeated,
"The Queen Mother is in danger. Seal the chamber."
The command ended in a strangled gasp when something long and white hissed past Leia's head and planted itself in the side of the sergeant's neck. Han cried out and instinctively shielded Leia, throwing himself onto her and nearly losing an arm as her lightsaber blade snapped to life. They had barely hit the floor when more of the strange projectiles hissed past overhead, coming from all corners of the chamber and filling the air with a sound like ripping cloth. An instant later, the rest of the guards dropped to the floor amid a cacophony of strangled outcries and clattering armor. Leia pressed her hand to Han's chest.
"Han, you've got to stop doing that."
She rolled him off with surprising ease and came up kneeling, then plucked at her robe.
"Jedi, remember?"
"Sorry, old habits."
Han rose to his knees. Half the suitors in the room, a couple of dozen, were charging across the chamber, leaping and dodging furniture, either holding a white throwing knife or drawing another from their sleeves. He spun around, reaching for the fallen sergeant's weapon, and found the entire complement of guards lying in the archway, most dead already, but a few writhing in pain, with a plastoid hilt protruding from their throats or faces. A cold knot formed in the pit of Han's stomach. The assassins were good, organized, and well-trained. He crawled forward and grabbed the sergeant's bulky power blaster, and began to fumble with the unfamiliar Hapen safety.
"Blast! I don't care what you say. Next time I'm bringing..."
Leia's lightsaber droned behind him, then the smell of burned flesh filled the air, and a body thudded to the floor. The rest of the attackers were already racing into the archway to either side of the Solos. Han turned to find Leia behind him, standing over a dead Hapen. Leia pulled Han to his feet, in the process turning him back toward the waiting chamber. A dozen young noblemen were standing over the middle-aged bachelor, who had been lecturing the pale-skinned kid about the hat. Another 15 suitors were watching in slack-jawed astonishment as the kid dived and rolled toward the same door through which the Solos had entered, dodging a constant stream of blaster fire from the guards posted there. Now that the assassin had discarded her oversized coat, revealing a skin-tight bodysuit and a utility belt lined with throwing knives, it was very clear Leia had been right about her being female. And she did have hair. At least a little of it. The top hat was also gone, revealing a bushy topknot that made her look wild, unpredictable, and very dangerous. Hans started to shoulder the power blaster, but Leia put a hand on the barrel. "Not yet," she said. "She's force-sensitive."
"Force-sensitive?"
Han understood what Leia was saying. The woman would not be a quick kill, and they could not afford to get tied up here.
"Will someone please tell me what the blazes is going on?"
"Maybe later." Leia turned up the corridor after the assassins. "After I have time to figure it out myself." Han grabbed a couple of spare power packs off the dead sergeant and raced after Leia. By the time he caught up to her, they were 24 meters down the white stone corridor and not gaining on their targets. Han stopped and knelt at the side of the corridor, taking cover behind the pedestal supporting a blue sheen suit of early Durasteel blast armor.
"We need to slow them down," he said.
"Good idea," Leia continued running. "Try not to hit me."
"Hey!"
Han called.
"Not what I meant!"
But Leia was well down the corridor, already passing beneath the great chandelier and picking up speed. Han cursed her foolhardiness, then took 3 deep breaths and shouldered the power blaster. Before he could open fire, the assassin suddenly stopped running and glanced uncertainly back toward Leia. Even without the Force, Han could sense their confusion. Either they had come to an unexpected dead end, or they had not seen her attack their fellows and could not understand why she was charging them. Maybe both.
"What the blazes is going on?" Han asked again.
He set his sights on the Hapen in front and blasted him between the shoulder blades, then swung the muzzle to the next man and fired again. That one bounced off a display pedestal, then staggered into the middle of the corridor and collapsed. The surviving assassins dived for cover, finally starting to return fire. Leia caught up to the rear of the group and launched herself into a whirling lightsaber attack, cloaking herself behind a basket of sapphire light and batting blaster bolts back toward their source. Han dropped another assassin, and she killed 3. Han blasted a man's leg and sent him somersaulting across the corridor. Leia used the Force to crush 2 more beneath a flying suit of heavy plexoid armor. Then the deafening bang of a concussion grenade echoed down the corridor. Han was momentarily blinded by a brilliant flash of yellow. Leia cried out in surprise, and the air resonated with the piercing shriek of blaster fire. Hapen voices began to scream and abruptly fall silent, and blaster bolts flew down the corridor so furiously it took a moment for Han to realize his vision had cleared. Leia was forced tumbling back toward him, somersaulting and twisting through the air, arcing from one side of the corridor to the other, batting blaster bolts aside and taking momentary shelter behind the display pedestals. Behind her, the surviving assassins, if there were any, were nowhere to be seen. And a wall of royal guards was charging into the far end of the corridor, power blasters blazing. Han rose just high enough to show his shoulders and head above the pedestal he was using for cover.
"Knock it off, you rotters!" he yelled. "We're on..."
A volley of blaster bolts brought his protest to an end. Han looked back to the royal guards who had already advanced halfway down the corridor.
"Okay,"
he growled.
"I've had it with you guys shooting at my wife."
Han took aim at the guard's feet and began to bounce blaster bolts off the floor. An angry-browed man with the weathered face of a veteran pulled a concussion grenade off his equipment belt.
"No,"
Han cried, more to himself than anyone else.
"Don't!"
The guard thumbed the activation switch, and Han had no choice but to take aim at the man's chest. Before he opened fire, a string of bolts flew up the corridor from behind him, catching the guard full on and knocking him off his feet. The grenade tumbled from the Hapen's hand and rolled free. Han swung around in shock, or maybe it was fear, and had just enough time to glimpse the pale-skinned assassin standing in the archway, firing a cumbersome Hapen power blaster with each hand. Then the concussion grenade detonated behind him, filling the corridor with light and thunder and fire. The assassin barely blinked. She simply continued firing with one of her weapons and used the other to wave the Solos toward her.
"Come on."
Her voice was high but cold.
"If you want to live."
Han glanced over at Leia. She nodded vigorously.
"Who doesn't?"
Leia rose and raced toward the archway, spinning and tumbling, batting the few blaster bolts that came her way back up the corridor. Han mirrored her progress, scrambling along sideways and laying suppression fire back toward the chandelier. He still had no idea what was happening here, but it was growing more and more apparent that nobody else did either. And when that happened, the only rule became survival by any means possible.
As they passed through the archway, the pale woman pointed her chin toward the entrance by which they had arrived.
Stairs. Fine by me,
Leia said, leading the way. They met no resistance as they had crossed the chamber, for the suitors who had not taken part in the attack were cowering behind furniture or cringing in corners, unwilling to risk their lives without weapons of their own. Han led the way down the stairs and into the corridor that led back toward the salon he and Leia had occupied earlier. The assassin called out behind him.
Wait!
Han stopped and glanced back to see her kneeling at the entrance to the turret. She was pointing both power blasters up the stairs, but looking toward Han and Leia.
Where are you going?
She demanded.
Back to the hangar, Han answered. We've got to get out of here.
No.
The pale woman glanced back into the turret and began to fire up the stairs.
We have a contract to finish. We?
Leia asked.
Maybe you're not getting paid, but you are part of this.
The knuckles on Leia's weapon hand went white, but luckily Han was the only one who saw.
Look, Leia said, I don't know...
You obviously know who we are, Han interrupted. How about returning the favor?
The assassin looked away from the stairs long enough to scowl at him.
You don't know? We haven't exactly been in the loop,
Leia pointed out, picking up on Han's strategy.
We just got in from Corellia.
A flurry of blaster bolts flashed into the corridor, nearly taking off the assassin's head. She merely rolled out the doorway and pressed her back against the wall, then glanced over at Leia's lightsaber.
Why don't you call me Nashta?
She almost seemed to smile.
I'd like that.
All right, Nashta, Han said. In case you haven't noticed, someone set us up.
Tenel Ka obviously knows about the assassination attempt,
Leia added.
And that means we have no chance of getting to her right now. All that can happen is we get trapped and killed.
I don't think she knew we were involved until this started,
Han said.
But that's changed. We've only got about 2 minutes to get back to the Falcon if we're lucky. After that, the hangar's going to be sealed up so tight, even a lightsaber won't be able to cut our way back inside.
Tenel Ka's Palace, Planet Hapes, deep inside the Hapes Consortium.
The consort's sitting room stank of smoke, scorched fabric and seared flesh, and the floor was strewn with charred furniture and blaster-burned bodies. Emergency crews were evacuating the injured, while palace security agents holo-recorded the dead. On the far side of the chamber, a group of dazed-looking nobles was being sequestered by a detail of the Hapen Royal Guard. Jaina had begun to have a bad feeling about the CEC light transport that had jumped to hyperspace just as she and Zek entered the system. It had been accelerating away from Hapes at a rate few freighters could achieve. And the fact that there had been 2 squadrons of Hapen starfighters on the vessel's tail only tended to confirm that it had been the Millennium Falcon. Zek leaned close. Han and Leia Solo did not do this, he whispered. It's not their style.
I don't need you to tell me that. Don't you think I know my own parents?
Zek started across the room without another word. Jaina followed Zek toward the corner, where Prince Isolder was watching a female security officer interview a shaken-looking noble. As Jaina and Zek approached, 2 bodyguards stepped out to block their way. Isolder touched the arm of one.
No, Brack.
Though it had a few new and well-placed lines, Isolder's strong-featured Hapen face was as handsome as it had ever been.
They're fine.
Brack did not retreat.
They're Jedi, my lord, after what just happened.
Isolder clamped down on Brack's arm and physically pulled him back.
They're probably the reason my daughter survived what just happened.
He turned his attention to Jaina.
Unless I miss my guess, you were the source of the Queen Mother's recent uneasiness.
I did reach out to her, yes, Jaina said.
I thought as much.
Isolder opened his arms, inviting an embrace.
It's good to see you again, Jaina.
And you as well, Prince Isolder.
Jaina hugged him, then stood aside as he clasped arms with Zek.
I'm only sorry we couldn't arrive earlier.
Nonsense. We're thankful for your, warning. It prompted the Queen Mother to increase her guard.
And to seal the residence's inner blast doors,
Tenel Ka said, arriving behind Jaina and Zek.
You have nothing to be sorry for.
Jaina turned and saw Tenel Ka standing 2 meters away,
surrounded by a small company of attendants and royal guards.
Your Majesty,
Jaina bowed, and Zek along with her.
Jaina, Zek, what an unexpected pleasure.
She motioned them upright, then glanced over her shoulder toward the great hall where most of the devastation had taken place.
I assume your visit has something to do with that?
Right. We came to warn you.
Jaina did not mention the Corellian assault fleet that Boatu suspected would soon be on its way to help with the coup. She would share that intelligence later, once they were alone.
We didn't think it would happen so soon.
I know you did everything in your power.
Tenel Ka's face grew troubled. She continued,
What I don't understand is why your parents were involved.
Jaina felt like she had been kicked in the stomach.
Involved? You're sure?
More than we'd like to be,
Isolder said. He sounded more disappointed than angry.
Your mother and Captain Sura arrived unannounced and asked for an audience with the Queen Mother. Before she could find time for them, they slipped out of the guest salon and disabled the entire palace security system.
We're still trying to learn how,
Tenel Ka said.
As close as we can estimate, they did it in less than 2 minutes, and they had to travel nearly half a kilometer through unfamiliar corridors.
Maybe you're having trouble because they didn't do it, Zek suggested.
Of course they did it!
The woman who said this was a stately-looking aide of perhaps 40 or 50. It was hard to tell, given how hard Hapens worked to stay young and attractive.
Such a feat is nothing for a...
Thank you, Lady Galney.
Tenel Ka silenced the woman with a polite flip of two fingers, then turned to Zek.
Do you have another theory?
Zek furrowed his brow, then said, Maybe they were here for the same reason we are. To warn you. The suggestion was greeted only by doubtful, in many cases scornful, Hapen expressions, and even Jaina had trouble seeing the basis for Zek's assertion. Finally, Tenel Ka asked,
Then why were they seen leaving with the leader of the assassination squad?
They were?
Jaina gasped.
I'm afraid so,
Tenel Ka said.
A pale woman with a shaved head and a topknot. When my guard managed to pin your parents down, she even risked her own life to rescue them.
Jaina's heart sank. It certainly sounded like her parents were working with the assassins. There must be an explanation. Zek gave her arm a reassuring squeeze. Jaina, you need to trust your feelings. Jaina pulled away, irritated and confused, and shaken.
I don't know what my feelings are,
Jaina said. She turned to Tenel Ka.
Queen Mother, I don't know what to say. I'm having a hard time believing it myself,
Tenel Ka replied.
First appearances are against them, but the investigation is far from complete, and there is some conflicting evidence.
Such as? Zek demanded.
Some eyewitness accounts suggest the Solos may have attacked a few assassins when the fighting began.
Tenel Ka turned and extended her arm toward the great hall where most of the fighting had taken place.
We can go have a look if you'd like.
I'd like. Zek's voice was hardly hostile, but it did not take a Jedi to sense that he was angry. Why are you ignoring these accounts?
We're not ignoring them,
Isolder said. He stepped to Zek's side, and they all started toward the ruined hall.
But eyewitness accounts are notoriously unreliable, as I'm sure you were taught in your investigation courses at the Jedi Academy.
And some eyewitnesses claim the men the Solos attacked were actually trying to defend the Queen Mother,
Lady Galney said.
Some very credible witnesses.
I'll judge that for myself, Zek said. He turned to Isolder. When can I speak to these witnesses? Isolder stopped and turned to Zek.
You want to interrogate Hapen nobles?
That's right, Zek said. There's something wrong here, and I...
That's enough.
Jaina grabbed the back of Zek's arm and squeezed.
I'm sure the Queen Mother and her staff will discover the truth.
Fact,
Tenel Ka said.
The investigation will give the Solos every benefit of the doubt, and I do intend to interview every eyewitness personally.
Thanks, Your Majesty,
Jaina said.
I appreciate it. If there's anything we can do to help...
There is,
Isolder said instantly.
We know the Falcon often travels under false transponder codes. A list would prove very helpful.
Jaina's mouth grew dry. When Jaina was slow to answer, Lady Galney reminded her,
The Hapes Consortium is an important part of the Galactic Alliance. A very important part. And your parents are terrorists.
Alleged terrorists,
Tenel Kar corrected. She fixed her gray eyes on Jaina, then said,
It would be better for everybody. My commanders will be more careful if they know when they're actually dealing with the Falcon.
And the information will be useful only as long as they